The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
What a week. What a week. Welcome to Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike.
Good to be here.
And familiar voice, but new host, Deanna.
Hello.
Hi. And like I said, familiar. You've been with Ask an Atheist for a while.
Yeah, I've been doing all the commercials.
Yeah, and and now she's finally behind the microphone with us. And I figured we would go straight into the news today, because it's been kind of a big news week. And our first news article comes from the Seattle PI. And it's Judgment Day. Atheists scoff. Is the Judgment Day coming on May 21st, 2011? One group of Christians with a radio show is spreading the word that the rapture is happening this month and you'd better be ready. Meanwhile, a group of atheists has started a countdown to backpedaling. We Can't Know is decked out with a countdown clock ticking off the seconds until May 21st. The URL, of course, is pointing some fun at the wecanknow.org, the official site of the family radio group predicting the end of times. Wait a minute.
It's about us.
This sounds familiar.
Awesome.
It's 6 days. Nice. 6 days until the end of the world.
That's great. That means 7 days until the backpedaling begins, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that is kind of one of the things that's been happening this week is we've been getting a lot of press.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. Not only from the Seattle PI, which is one of the two big newspapers now, exists mostly on the internet now.
Right.
But also there's another one here from CBS News saying the same sort of thing, talking about family radio evangelist Harold Camping and this prediction that he's made. And if you're not familiar with Harold Camping, he's this crazy old coot who has this radio show all over AM radio where he just spouts all the crazy stuff that bounces around on the inside of his noggin. And he has a record of predicting the end of the world.
Yeah, what bounces around his noggin is numerology, mostly, is that he assigns special numbers to ideas about religion and concepts within Christianity, and somehow uses that with some very specious math to figure out when the date is. Now, one of the mistakes that CBS and a lot of the news places have been making is that they think we're counting down to May 21st. We're not.
Nope.
We're counting down to May 22nd, the day after the world is supposed to end.
Because this is the day that family radio is going to be extra fun to listen to, because these are the people who thought that they weren't going to have a broadcast day. So if they really are true believers, they haven't provided or prepared for any programming.
Yeah, and a couple people have asked me already, you know, what if Harold Camping is right? And let me give you my new elevator answer for that is, if Harold Camping was right, we wouldn't be here asking this question, because the world would have ended while I was in high school.
That's true. 1994, if I remember correctly, was his last prediction.
Right.
Using the same numerology, the same Bible passages, the same reasoning, or flawed reasoning, actually. But it didn't end then. I don't think it's going to end now.
Yeah, this is the same excuse he's going to use now, and there's a couple people. I actually was chatting yesterday with Tracy Harris of the Atheist Experience, and she sent me a link that she had gotten from somebody who knows somebody close to family radio, and they were asking them, hey, what's the deal here? And they said that what's starting to leak out is the backpedaling.
Yeah.
Very, very slowly. They're talking about how this is probably going to be something where family radio says, you know, our prayers, our hard work, our show of piety has moved the Creator's heart and has decided to forestall the end of the world.
Of
They're going to simply take credit for saving us when nothing happens. So in 6 days or 7 days from now, we're going to have a good understanding about whether this is the reason they give for the end of the world. Like, we saved you. Now you have to. And this is the part that bothers me, is I know that none of the people in the group, with very few exceptions, are going to come out against this guy. Nobody's going to get angry at Harold Camping.
I think there will be some people who this might be the final straw for as belief goes, is that for a lot of the stories that I've heard for the conversion, you know, on Living After Faith, is there's usually some moment where they finally realize that something is wrong, that something has that something doesn't make sense here.
Absolutely. You know, I hate to play into the whole atheists are angry at God stereotype, but sometimes that's true. Sometimes people have been hurt, and that causes them to really question and re-examine their beliefs. And when they're hurt like that, that it gives them kind of a spot where they can step outside of their belief and their happiness and their love and their Jesus, and they go, "Ooh, something's not right." And that's when they discover it's all not true.
But I wouldn't say that we're angry at God. I think we're angry at the people who believe in God and act on behalf of their belief in this God.
I like to say in some ways the transition from non-belief to belief is like grieving, and that anger is a part of grief.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, I just wish more people, and this is something I talked to you a couple days ago about, Sam, that there's this tradition in American history. There's a certain cultural aspect of being an American that we've lost somewhere along the way. And I think that we used to get really angry at hucksters.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not the sort of person who wants to call upon you to get together some sort of KKK lynch mob and run the dowsers out of town and lynch them or anything. Not at all. But can we at least get angry? Can we get angry at people who defraud us and make it so they crawl under a rock somewhere, that they're afraid to come out, that they're just certain towns they don't go into because they already tried selling them fake medicine or faith healing or psychic abilities? Is there some anger that we can get up at these people and just say, you know what, you screwed us over, go away?
Yeah.
There's a lot to be angry at Harold Camping about, as well as we've been following in the news. A lot of people are plunking down their life savings. There's that young family you guys talked about in the news story last week, where they said they had calculated out to the day how much money they needed and saved up so they could have living money until May 21st, and nothing else. What's going to happen to that poor pregnant woman and her husband and the child they already have when their money is out and the world hasn't ended? I'm really, really upset. I'm pissed.
And this is not the first time this happened. This is not the only person that is the victim of Camping.
Yeah.
Harold Camping has destroyed a number of people's lives with this prediction. I know even a lot of atheists will say, oh, well, and this comes back to that anger that I'm talking about. A lot of atheists will say, oh, well, that's just a kook. Why do you pay attention to the kooks? Oh, they're just silly. Why? That's exactly what they want. They just want to get attention. But they destroy lives. This isn't just a bunch of silly people who are saps. And there's this guy, Robert Fitzpatrick. He's a MTA transit employee out of New York. Or is this Boston?
No, it's New York.
Yeah. It's New York City. He plunked down his life savings as a 60-year-old ex-MTA employee, $140,000. This is all the money he has to help spread the word, basically buying 1,000 placards on subways.
Yeah.
Basically proclaiming that on May 21st, there's going to be a global earthquake and the beginning of the end. And here's the thing, is that if you really believe this stuff, it makes total sense that you would do this.
And we have an article from the HuffPost that we're reading from about this, and it ends on a very, very scary note. He goes on and he says that he's following Harold Camping here, and then he says, it's the date, Fitzpatrick said. He also said he doesn't want to think about the possibility that he's wrong.
That's what's really scary, because what are his options after May 21st? I really hope that this poor guy has friends he can stay with, maybe children that will let him have a room. He's got to go find a job and, you know, build up his retirement savings again. Social Security, I guess.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have it sounds like he had a really great savings. His retirement was going well, and now it's all gone. And Harold Camping deserves a lot of criticism. For every person who has plunked down everything they have on this, is he going to support them after his prediction doesn't come true? I doubt it.
I don't think he's in much of a position to do that, given his advanced age. And, I mean, if you're looking for options on May 21st, we have one for you, and the Seattle PI article was about this, is we are getting together at Dorky's Arcade at 9th and Pacific in Tacoma, where we will have vintage arcade games and live music. And our lineup is Three Ninjas, the up-and-coming nerdcore rapper featured on some popular atheist blogs, with Tangent Bots fit for the arcade electronic beats. Lena Lou rounds out the set with instrumental guitar-driven sonic badness, more post-rock than metal, but delivered without regard for personal safety. And we've added a new act, Oven Rake, a Tacoma local with a lovely selection of live homegrown 8-bit electronica and dance. And it's $10 at the door, again, at Dorky's Arcade.
Yeah, you were talking about Harold Camping's Advanced Age. Mm. There's another thing he does have that puts him in a position to support these people. And not just a moral obligation that I think he really does have, that his preaching drove people into financial disaster, into oblivion. And his media empire is estimated about being $100 million. This is a guy who has a lot of money. And I say that, you know, Harold Camping, you have a moral obligation to take care of the people for which lives you have destroyed. And if I thought there was something I did on this radio show that drove somebody to destroy their entire life, I would be ashamed of myself. Not only would I want to help these people and make up for what I had done, I couldn't imagine not putting a gun in my mouth. Harold Camping, you were a monster.
I agree.
I'd also like to add that Family Radio and Harold Camping do not appear to be putting all of their financial eggs in this one basket. So they have a survival plan if the world doesn't end, and they're not telling their followers to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me, is I don't doubt that Harold Camping believes this stuff on some level, but he clearly doesn't believe it as much as his followers, and he clearly doesn't care about his followers enough to give them that level of protection. You know what? Screw you, dude. Seriously. You are a monstrous human being. You are morally and ethically reprehensible. You are bankrupt.
I think I can get behind that.
He's been asked several times if, you know, he doesn't need this stuff after May 21st. Maybe he could donate his radio stations, his, you know, his assets, all that kind of stuff to the people who are going to be here during those 5 months of tribulation, which is the other part of the prediction, is that not until October 22nd, if I remember correctly, is the world going to finally actually end. The rapture happens 5 months before. So his radio station, his assets, everything he has and his organization has could be, you know, at least used to make things a little more decent for those of us who are stuck here after he gets raptured away. And he has dodged that question on every opportunity. I believe what he said was something like, it's not going to be business as usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I think I could use a little bit of a cheer up. And we have a call. So, Ed from Portland, you'd like to talk about atheists in high school. How are you?
Yeah, hey, you know, I agree with you about Camping. What a sociopath, I guess would be a word one would say.
I like that word.
Yeah, uncaring about others, totally. You know, I had heard another host, atheist host, say that he didn't believe in necessarily clubs for atheists in high schools. And I remember when I was in high school, that was certainly a formative stretch of 4 years for me. And I would love to be able to hear, you know, counter voices. Like, you know, if someone was talking to this bus driver and was in his frame of reference there and said, you know, do you really believe this? At least, you know, some doubters could at least open maybe a chink in his armor a bit. What do you guys think about high school atheist clubs or free thinkers clubs? Are you for those kinds of things?
I would definitely say that I am, Ed. I'd say that especially when you're young and you're sort of forming new ideas,
yeah.
And atheism certainly is not a popular stance to take, and there's a lot of social...
You never hear it. Yeah.
There's a social stigma that comes with it, and I'm not for organized atheism. I want to clear that up. That I'm not saying that we should have a dogma or an overarching philosophy or an umbrella like that. But atheist groups are not really about that. Atheist groups are the shared experience and being able to go into a room where suddenly you don't have to get into a defensive position talking about your non-belief. So the same way that I support gay, straight student alliance groups, because it's the same sort of thing. It's not like there's a philosophy really there. It's a shared experience in a place where people can feel safe.
A place to connect.
And kindred minds, too, I guess, related to that as well. I mean, acceptance, the old thing about, you know, place where you go, where you're going to be accepted. But an atheist, right now, if you're on campus, the only religious views you hear, for at least so many kids do, is promoting and saying, how could anyone be a non-believer? I mean, you might be a Muslim or whatever, but everyone hates a non-believer. And you're going, wait a second now.
Sure. And a couple weeks ago, we actually said, we gave a shout-out to one of my former high schools when their atheist organization, on-campus atheist organization, participated in Ask an Atheist Day, and ones of people protested it, and it ended up in the paper.
Was that wasn't the fellow that stabbed himself, no.
No, this was at a high school.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, I recall that, yeah, that you saying that, yeah. I sure wish they were more widespread, and I think with shows like yours, you know, kids are going to think a lot more, so good for you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Secular Student Association has been sponsoring and starting to ramp up their efforts, allowing high schoolers to have their own secular clubs. So I think this is something that they've recognized is needed. And boy, I don't know about you guys, but my experience in junior high and high school was pretty isolating a lot of the time. And I wasn't even an open non-believer, but you know, to have any kind of club where you can really feel like it's kind of a little ready-made social circle where you have support, you have friends, you have people that you can really count on. I think this is hugely important. And if anybody is interested in this, the Secular Student Alliance will help you start up your own high school atheist or secular club. All you have to do is get a hold of them, find them on their website. And those of us who want to support them, throw some money their way. Secular Student Alliance is a great organization.
That it is. I know
right.
Go ahead.
I think I'll give a donation with PayPal. Yeah, they sound pretty cool.
Good for you, man. Good for you.
I know my particular high school career probably would have gone a lot differently if I knew there were things like Secular Student Alliance out there back in the early 90s. So I definitely support it.
Amen.
Well, hey, thank you so much for answering.
Yep, no problem. You have a good day.
You too. Take care now.
Great. Bye. Thanks, Ed. Yeah, that really is one of those things that it feels really isolating, and that sense of isolation can only be exacerbated by being in high school. I mean, adolescence is hard as it is, but then you have this other thing that makes you different. That's the reason we have this show, is to make it a little bit easier to be different, to let you know you're not alone, to let you know you're not the only atheist in town, and that, you know what, there's nothing wrong with not believing.
That's true. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of religious dogma influencing government policy? Do you support the separation of church and state? Then the Secular Coalition for America is your voice in Washington, D.C. The Secular Coalition for America is the only national lobbying organization representing atheists, agnostics, humanists, and other secular Americans in our nation's capital. The Secular Coalition for America speaks out for millions of non-theistic and non-religious Americans who support public policies based on science and reason, not religious bias. Go to secular.org today to sign up for emails and get involved. That's secular.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
The end of the world is now. Millions will disappear in the rapture, and those left behind will feel the wrath of God.
So who better to help those people feeling the wrath than an atheist? We don't believe in God, so we're pretty sure we won't get raptured out of here.
You can help by donating to Rapture Relief.
We'll use the money to help those afflicted during Armageddon.
And if for some reason this all turns out to be just another failed prophecy, your money won't be wasted.
We'll give it to Camp Quest, which teaches children critical thinking and science so they won't be duped by religious fables in the first place.
Learn more at rapture-relief.org.
A satirical benefit for Camp Quest, brought to you by Seattle Atheists.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And like I said, that she may be new to the hosting part, but you've heard her voice before. Thank you very much, Deanna. And I really like that new commercial.
I love it, too. Isn't that awesome? It was so much fun. I felt like a total dork while I was recording it, because you have to kind of go crazy with the putting a lot of emphasis into the, I'm going to be happy and perky, but you know, it when you don't have video, when you don't get to see somebody, you have to put more into the voice part.
Yeah.
So that was a hoot.
And the Seattle Atheist Rapture Relief Project is looking really, really fun.
That's
and
great.
Funny. And I like the fact that the money is going specifically for a Camp Quest installation here in the Washington area.
That would be so
and
great.
That would be really great. And so we move on to some emails. And we got a couple that are basically about the same thing. I'm going to read them both and let you guys respond. Our first one comes from Don from Portland, Oregon. And he's asking about a Portland party. And he says, is there a countdown party in Portland? I want to be there for the end. And then we have Dee Bray from the internet, who asks, why are people charging money for an end-of-the-world party? How foolish are they going to feel on the 22nd of May? The whole countdown thing is going to create a buzz, but do you think it's really helpful?
I think it is helpful. I think that a lot of times these people exist in this weird little bubble, and I think that a lot of times something is so stupid that ridicule is necessary, that these guys also create a lot of harm. There's a serious side to this, like we said before. Yeah. There are people whose lives are destroyed by this. As for why we're charging, it's a fundraiser for our show. We have to pay for airtime, and this is how we keep the lights on.
And we don't expect the world to end, so we are going to need that money.
Yeah, we fully intend to continue on with the show after the world supposedly ends.
There's a precedent, if you've ever played Fallout 3, that there are radio stations after the apocalypse.
Yeah. So even if it is an apocalyptic, post-giant earthquake, scary, messed-up world out there, we'll still broadcast to be a friendly voice on the air for all of those poor people being tortured.
Either way, we're still here.
And yeah, we'll make you go on missions if you miss your charisma check.
And as far as a party in Portland, I don't know specifically.
I haven't heard of any.
So come on up to Tacoma. It's not that long of a drive, and we would love to see you. I know it would make my day if some folks from Portland came up.
Yeah, it's only like a 3-hour drive, isn't it?
Less than if it's me.
Less than.
And we don't know what time the rapture is happening, so start early.
Yeah.
Traffic can get really bad during an apocalypse, trust me.
It gets even worse when you're in stop-and-go traffic.
However, you're trying to get into a major metropolitan area, so it might be a little easier for you.
Oh, that's true. Everybody be leaving in case of emergency, I think.
Yeah, so going against traffic, you know a bit about that. Anyway, our next email, I'm looking forward to this one. It's Mr. Pineapples from the UK.
Mr. Pineapples, no!
Mr. Pineapples!
Get off the counter, Mr. Pineapples!
Surely you
bad
must be
kitty.
Joking, Mr. Pineapples.
Bad kitty.
And Mr. Pineapples writes, why do you atheists need your atheism? Who is the Pope of atheism? And why is this your intellectual prop?
Is that a band name?
Intellectual prop?
Intellectual prop!
Yeah, I'm pretty certain I can say that on the radio. Seems like you need something to believe in after all.
I don't think anyone says that we don't believe in anything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one thing that we don't believe, that's all.
We believe in nothing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, no God, that's atheism, but that's not to say I don't have a value system. What I call my value system is humanism, and mm-hmm. I do believe in something. I believe in something positive. I believe in, I have a value set, but it's not atheism. Atheism is about what I don't believe in. So saying I don't need an absence is a weird statement to make.
Because think about this. If you're somebody who believes in a God, think about all the other things you believe in that have nothing to do with God.
Yeah.
Think about, I believe that so-and-so is a good candidate for president. I believe this is the best movie ever made. I believe this is the best place to go for a beer. These are all things that you believe. I believe that this is right. I believe that this is wrong. I believe this is good. I believe this is bad.
Yeah, but saying that, why do you atheists need your atheism, it's like asking me, why do I need my lack of 14th arm? That's a question that I really can't answer, because it's an odd question.
Well, it's a question that assumes that, you know, why do we need my atheism? Why do you need your not believe in Bigfootism?
Yeah, that's
why
true.
Why do you need a lot of things that you don't believe?
And this goes back to that, and he actually says, Pope of Atheism, is something we've been saying on the show a lot, is there is no Archbishop of Atheism. That's part of the reason why we have this show, is because there are no voices. There's no one single person you can go to, and we're showing you that. We're showing you the diversity of voices that exist in the free thought community. There's, you know, there are the authors that everybody likes to read. There's Dawkins, there's Hitchens, there's Harris, and they are definitely authorities on their subject matter.
They're the most well-known voices, but they are by no means the only ones. I mean, there are so many people. We're like a big collective, but not a Borg collective, to use a reference Mike would appreciate there.
I think a good way of looking at it is, I don't really think of atheism community as having leaders so much as it has spokespeople.
Mm-hmm.
That these are people that are saying things, and we hold them up on our shoulders because we think they say things in an intelligent way, or in a funny way, or an entertaining way, or in a persuasive way. But it's not like if Dawkins says that you have to vote for this candidate for president, or you need to buy this brand of car or toothpaste, that we're immediately going to go out there and agree with him. There are things that Dawkins has said that I disagree with. There are things that Hitchens has said that I disagree with. And you know what? So what? I like them on certain things, that people are complicated, and that there are good things about people that they're right on. I mean, there are things that I'm going to say today that people are going to disagree with, and you know what? That's fine.
Yeah, and I'm willing to call them leaders. I'm willing to call Hitchens and Dawkins, et cetera, leaders. But there's a difference between a leading voice and a commander. Hitchens can't come in my house and tell me what to do. He can't tell me to change my dish pattern.
He can't excommunicate you either.
Exactly. He can't kick me out of the club. He can't demand a tithe from me. But he does. He is a leading voice. He is somebody people go to. He does speak a lot about this topic. But he's not in charge of the movement.
And that comes back to atheism. Let's get that definition out there again. Not theism. Atheism, like atypical, asexual, asymmetrical, meaning not typical, not symmetrical, not sexual. When you're an atheist, you're not a theist. That's all there is to it. Like Sam said, the definition is two words, no gods. And the only way to be a bad atheist is to believe in a god.
Yeah, that's doing it wrong. What I like to say is that my atheism is, while it is not a belief specifically, it is a lack of one belief, which actually leads to other positive beliefs. Now, a lot of times theism leads to, you know, you could say, oh, all it is a belief in God. But there's a lot of baggage that comes along with it, depending on the brand of theism you are. Like, for instance, the belief that gay people are sinners and bad and they choose to do bad things. Now, my atheism informs me that not only do I not have to believe that, but I don't believe in God, and I don't believe he has anything to say about human sexuality. So then that informs my positive belief that everybody should accept and love who they are for who they are and not consider anything a sin if it's not harmful to other people. And that, I think, where a negative really informs and shapes a positive.
And I think one of the important things to point out here in your description here is that without this authority, you are free to make your own choices, and you are free to make a decision about what is right and what is wrong based on the evidence, not on some
Absolutely.
Hierarchical structure.
Yeah, I can decide that owning hamsters is wrong based on my own personal ethics. I can look at the evidence. I can do some research. I can figure out what is harmful or not harmful about owning hamsters, and I can say, I think owning hamsters is wrong. Now, personally, I don't. I don't see anything wrong with it. But if I wanted to, I don't have any authority to tell me what I can and can't believe.
And I think that's really what today's show is about, is those sort of choices, those sorts of decisions, is if you're listening to this show right now, and you are because you hear my voice, I'm going to make a couple assumptions right now, that there are a lot of people who accuse atheists of being closed-minded. That we aren't willing to hear your, we just shut ourselves off from all the arguments that you make and stick our fingers in the ears and say la 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 and are dismissive. I want to show you today that that's not the case.
Yeah.
I want to show you, to you, I'm going to make a couple assumptions right off the bat. I'm going to assume that you're a Christian. I mean, that's a pretty easy bet in this country. It's like 90%+ mm-hmm. of the United States self-identifies as a Christian. And I'm also going to assume that you think we're wrong about this whole atheism thing, that you think when we die, we're either going to go to hell or we're going to be separate from God, or either way, we're not going to have as good of an outcome after death as you. And I'm going to assume you want us to change our minds about that, and you have the best interest at heart of us, that you really want us to live on after we die in a comfortable fashion, not being torn apart by knives and fire and bad stuff. So I'm going to assume that you really do want to change your mind. You're not just a trollish person like Fred Phelps who just wants to rub our face in our damnation. So I'm going to make that assumption about you.
Thank you for caring, I guess.
Yeah. I also want to let you know that we're not doing this to embarrass you or to lead you into some sort of a verbal ambush. That I want to give you the instructions today about how to change our minds. And this is an important thing because I have to assume that you really care about changing our minds, that you really do think you're right about this, and now I'm going to give you the recipe to do that. And the first thing I want to do is go through a lot of the things that don't really work. A lot of the stuff that gets thrown out there that really wastes both of our time. That when we start talking about you changing your mind, these are the arguments that I hear over and over again. And I'm not just pulling this off a website. These are things that I myself have encountered both in person and on the internet. So let's go through that. The number one, please don't quote the Bible at us. If I want to hit one of these things harder and harder, and I get this every so often, this usually comes from the fundamentalist end of the spectrum, but quoting the Bible doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had the one call from Glover where he's like, you know, you guys, you're leading people straight to the gates of hell, and my proof is all in the Bible. And if you'd like to tell us why that's okay, you can give us a call at Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
This is the one that really puzzles me probably the most, is that a believer has to know, they know what an atheist is. They know that we don't believe that their God, I guess you could say the cornerstone of their belief. They think this is the creator and maintainer and eventually destroyer of the universe. This is the cornerstone of all they believe. We don't believe in that being. We don't think it's real. We feel about that being the way we also feel about Hamlet or Darth Vader.
Right.
These are characters that exist on a page and in your mind, but nowhere else in the real world.
And there are some atheists who see the Bible as very interesting literature and like reading about these particular characters, but don't see them as real.
And that's something I do a lot, too, is when people hear me get angry about something that the God does in the Old Testament, like telling them to wipe out the Canaanites and, hey, don't let anything live, cut out the... That sort of really immoral stuff that appears in the Bible, and they hear me get kind of angry about it. I'm not getting angry at a person I think exists. I'm talking about, in the same fashion that I'm talking about a literary character. Like when I wrote a 9-page research paper about Hamlet a couple of years ago, where I talked about how he's a horrible human being.
Right.
I don't think Hamlet is real, but I can still get angry at somebody on the screen or on the page. So... here's the thing. If you know that we don't believe in this person, we don't believe in this character, this being, this force, whatever you want to call it, why do you assume that we would hold any authority with the Bible? Why do you think that we would give any credence to something simply because it's written on that page? And, you know, pointing out passages to us that, you know, we're fools or sentenced to an afterlife without God or roasting or whatever, that just doesn't convince us any more than you would be convinced by somebody quoting passages from the Quran to you.
Right. Straight up, you, the Bible to you is proof because it is the written word of God. We don't go for that. That is not what we believe. And we believe there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that isn't true. Absolutely. So if you're gonna try and convince us of these things, you can't just use the one source that we've already discounted. If you want to use that source, you must first prove that that source makes sense.
Yeah, and again, this is an argument. Well, they call this an argument from authority, that an authority figure, an authority book, it's just automatically right because it's in that book. We don't buy that. Something is true or not true based on its own merits, not based on who says it. Here's the thing: if Hitler says that water is wet, it's wet whether he says it or not. I mean, that's the way this works. And also, the Bible is clearly a biased source. I mean, who cares if the Bible says that we're wrong about something? If Pepsi wrote a book, what would that book say about Coke? What would Ford say about Chevy, and what would the Joker say about Batman?
Yeah.
When you're against somebody and you think they're wrong and you write a book, you don't expect an objective account. That's just silly. And clearly, if you want to convince us with a book, like Sam said, you got to prove that this book is right. And with so much the Bible promotes things like inequality to women, slavery, anti-gay sentiments, it only makes me want to ignore that source. And yes, there's a couple things about being nice to your neighbor. But you know what? Maybe the Third Reich had a really good transportation platform. There are certain things that cancel out in the big picture. Like, if somebody says, hey, by the way, I want to give every voter a new free puppy, but I'm also going to kill your mother. I'm like, ooh, free puppy!
And it's not like the Bible is the only source of documentation about why you should be nice to people and why you shouldn't kill people. There are other places to get this stuff. Humanism, for example, says a lot of those
Just
things.
Thinking about it and being able to apply simple empathy to this. Yeah. Like, you know what? I don't want to be murdered.
There's a great, actually, a compilation of secular humanist knowledge. A.C. Grayling just released this book, wrote this book called The Good Book. And he took secular things, good advice, don't kill people, be nice to each other, if you give a man a fish, you know, that kind of stuff, all put it together in a book. And it is, you know, kind of a play on the Bible. Of course, it's not a Bible because we're atheists.
Well, Bible just means book.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what bibliography comes from.
Sure, but I'm not going to make a cookbook and call it the food Bible. Wait, people do that. Never mind.
It's a cookbook! here's the other thing, folks. Okay, I'm going to let this one out. This is something you guys, you really have to stop doing this. Arguing God into existence using a riddle. Please don't do this to us. Please.
Oh, yes.
This is something apologists do all the time to us, and please don't do this. rather than try us to show physical evidence, what they try to do is come up with a fancy riddle through verbal exercises. Like you guys know the first cause argument?
Oh, yeah.
This is something Thomas Aquinas came up with in the Middle Ages.
Right.
And really hasn't moved far past this point. The first cause basically goes like this. everything has to have a cause.
Right.
That's the first statement. Therefore, everything that has a cause has a cause. So, okay, we're moving along. That first cause has to be God. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You said everything has to have a cause. What about God? Oh, but God doesn't have to have a cause.
Right. He's God.
And you've immediately invalidated the thing that started your argument. And if God doesn't need a cause, the universe doesn't need a cause.
One of my first personal YouTube videos, that's just me on YouTube and not Ask an Atheist, was somebody making an argument, who made this ball? Me. Who made me? God. Who made God? This is a wrong question.
That was it. And this is something that we like to call a special pleading. And if you don't know what special pleading is, it's a logical fallacy where you start out by making a universal rule, like in this instance, everything exists needs a creator. Then you demand an exception to it.
Yeah.
And just try to stop there. And you're immediately invalidating that rule. You're offering up a God and then arguing that God doesn't need a creator. So why are we even arguing? Why is there a middleman in this argument? It's amazing. These arguments can't just be limited to proving a god. If you want to have that first cause, why not just immortal rainbow leprechaun wizards
right
from dimension X?
And this isn't the only riddle we get. There's also, we talked about this before we got together today, is why is there something other than nothing, which is this completely tautologous riddle.
That's such a worthless thing to say. Why is there something other than nothing? Why is water wet rather than dry?
Why would there be nothing? To be honest, I think it's more preposterous that there could be nothing existing at all, just a great blackness, a blankness, a vacuum, a void.
Yeah.
Why would that exist? I think that's a lot less likely than that something has existed.
Okay, rule number three?
Well, I think the answer to that is really, why is there something other than nothing? Because we're here to observe it, which is not really an answer. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll be back in a minute.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington. You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And you had something about skeptics that you really wanted to get into in this
topic. I think it's very central to, if you're trying to convince us of something, the existence of God in this case, we have to acknowledge that, yes, we are atheists. We already have the idea that God does not exist. But we're also, the three of us in this room, and many atheists I know are skeptics. That's people who will really wait until they can get all the evidence before they decide something is true or not. And as skeptics, we know that we are humans. We're fallible people. If you show us a magic trick, the first thing we're going to think is, oh my God, magic is real. That's awesome. But we're skeptics and we know, wait a second, we're human. We can be fooled, misdirection, sleight of hand. So we're going to keep all these in mind. So we're going to try to falsify anything that's thrown at us. But at the same time, it also means we're not going to just dismiss any evidence that you present to us out of hand. We want to try to avoid the pitfalls of motivated reasoning, where we just say, okay, I'm going to believe this and I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say because I'm right and you're wrong. Now, we're going going to try to honestly approach this with open minds and receptive hearts to whatever kind of evidence you can give us.
One thing I've noticed also that goes in with what you're describing is that religious people feel like once they've finally gotten you convinced of God, once you've finally made a convincing argument, now that convincing argument is going to stand for all time. Once convinced, always convinced.
Right.
To be a skeptic and to be someone who follows the scientific method and understands these things, new evidence can change your mind.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you have a convincing argument that of God that later, at some later point, is disproven. As a skeptic, as somebody who's following the evidence, that means once this new evidence comes in, I'm not going to believe in God anymore.
That all knowledge is a current draft. That
exactly.
You have to know. It's like I've talked to people before who are fundamentalists, and one of the ones was, I just ask you straight out, do you think your wife is cheating on you? And most of them are going to say, no, I don't think they are. But you could learn something, or a new bit of data could come in that would change everything.
Yeah.
Like catching her in bed with somebody else.
Yeah.
You're not
going
to hold on to
evidence.
That. And like, oh, well, science is just blah, blah, blah. You know, it's such a weak foundation for your life. Yeah, but that new bit of data changes everything. You're not going to hold on to that strong foundation that she's not cheating on you by saying, oh, I'm not going to accept the data that you're sleeping with that dude right in front of me. You got to take in the new data, and this is something we get accused of a lot, is this worship of science. That we don't worship anything. The reason that we have a respect for the scientific method and the reason that we would expect you to apply it while making your arguments, it's a question of strict practicality.
Yeah.
Science works. It's as simple as that. This is the thing that cured polio. It allowed us to go to the moon. It lets us communicate over the radio to people on the other side of the world instantly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that takes diseases or problems that killed people. Struck them down. Like, for instance, I had a root canal last week. A nasty emergency root canal, and I can tell you it is awful. But if I had been born in the Middle Ages at the same time as Thomas Aquinas, I could have died from this.
Yeah, you'd have to go to a barber to get it fixed, for one. And that's just a start, and they had no concept of anesthetic, and they had no concept of disease. The Pasteurian antibiotics didn't exist.
But the tools they used were probably the same ones they used for blacksmiths. I mean, this is a sort of... They had one pair of pliers that exists. It's not like you go to Lowe's and you can pick out your pair, and there's a special just for dentistry. Dentistry and every other tool, this stuff all overlaps. And this is the same guy who also shaves you and leeches you.
Yeah.
So we've come a long way. Why hasn't religion have that same jump where you have this refined knowledge as you take in new data? So here's the thing.
That said, though, it's when, you know, you said people say we worship science, is we don't let science control every aspect of our lives. I don't let science pick my favorite color. I don't let science necessarily pick what I'm having for dinner that day. There is a personal choice here. Not every part of our lives is governed by the scientific method. Personal choice has its place in life.
Yeah, we just acknowledge that science is the best tool, the best process that we have right now for determining what is true.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about truth with a capital T that can't ever be questioned, that can't ever be tested. No, this is an ongoing, updating process where people hypothesize things, they prove them, they think they're true, and then, oh, new information, turns out it's not. But it's science that disproves the previous science. That's why it's so good.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to get to the heart of the matter. I'd like to, and this is something that, this is why the religious people are listening, is they want to know what that proof would look like.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You want to prove to us that God exists. Now, here we get to it. This is the core of it. Evidence for the existence of a God. Not just your God, but any God. Let's start there. Let's start at the broadest level. I want to see this God manifest itself somehow. Give me something I can look at, something I can measure, something I can use my senses on. I want to see this God. I want to hear it. I want to... Give me an it. Give me an it to look at.
Yeah.
Give me an it. I want a display of its power. I want to see it suspend the laws of physics. I want to see it turn everything we know on its head, reverse times. I mean, real miracles. Not miracles like, I found a parking space. Or... Oh my God, it rained when I needed it to, or oh my God, I got a sunny day on my wedding. Oh, what's wonderful, praise the Lord. No, sunny days happen whether you pray for them or not, and there's probably someone praying for the opposite.
Have you guys ever gotten the visualize a parking space argument? Have you ever gotten somebody who says, oh, you need parking, visualize a parking space?
I'm familiar with the technique. I mean, people say that if you visualize what you want, that you'll get it. But to be honest, it kind of sounds like a lot of hooey to me.
I think there's an ellipsis in there. If you visualize what you want and then you drive around the parking lot long enough, you will get it.
And that's true. You're actively doing something to get your parking spot.
Why would the divine give me a parking spot and not cancer?
Yeah, why would the divine give you a parking spot and then not get somebody out of a war zone or not save somebody's mother from a landmine?
Right. So what would this manifestation look like?
That's the question. Give me something to look at. Give me a being. I mean, whether you believe in this some sort of power or some man in a long nightgown with a long beard, whatever it is, put this thing in front of me and I'll judge it then. Don't just argue about what's not there and the spaces in our knowledge that we don't understand. Don't argue from I don't know equals I know, like, oh, I don't know what could possibly answer this question, therefore it must. Don't give me that. Give me a thing. It's not like I see a murder scene and I go, oh, okay. You know, and then I say, oh, it must have been the Trix rabbit who did this. No, give me something legitimate. Give me something I can measure.
And what would proof look like for you?
Well, you know, it would have to be something that is, like Mike said, very spectacular, actually miraculous. My thought would be something physical that we could test. You know, the crying statues of Mary are kind of a step in the right direction. Okay. You know, you have to be able, though, to prove that those tears aren't just paint that was put there by the guy that owns the statue, or that the priest of the church isn't messing with that. I'd say something like maybe the sky opens up, and written in stars in the sky, in the night sky, I am Yahweh, and I am real. That would be a great start.
That's, like she said, a great start, but that's not where it ends. I see what I want to see, and I just stop thinking, which a lot of people, I think, do. Once we get this thing, once we get this manifestation, we got to make sure it's not trickery. This isn't Penn and Teller. This isn't like the Wizard of Oz hiding behind the curtain with the machine. My first assumption is going to be that my senses are being fooled in some way. This is technological. This is something, an illusion. I also want to make sure I'm not hallucinating or drugged, so
yeah.
I'm going to turn to Sam and Deanna and go, you guys seeing this too? You guys seeing?
Well, and that's the thing is, again, ask an atheist, 253-584-1480. You can ask us if we'll believe your proof. I take a page from Carl Sagan on this one, and I really like not the movie, but the book Contact. I'm kind of giving away the ending, but he encodes that some creature, something, encodes messages in the fundamental numbers of the universe. And
like pi
or I or E is that at some point
Fibonacci, I think it was in the movie, in the book too,
right?
At first, yeah.
Is that at some point they find a message that can only have been put there by someone who was at the beginning of the universe and had the ability to modify the fundamental constants that operate the universe. That means that there was someone there, and it was a minded thing. Now, in Contact, I think the message that was there was simplified for the purposes of literature. So it was like a simple pictogram. I don't think that counts. I'd like to see an encoded MPEG-2 video stream in Pi. I think if we could, something that would unmistakable as an intended message in something that we can't change. It's just a fixed law in the universe. And even then, even under those circumstances, it doesn't prove Yahweh. It doesn't prove Zeus. It doesn't prove Odin. Certainly doesn't prove Zardoz.
It's an intelligence.
There was
being, not a specific being.
And it doesn't even say that it was a created universe. It says that there was a mind at the creation, at the start of the universe. It's sort of the differences between creation and created and generated. Created is like built from a kit out of Legos. Generated is more like genetic programming. What I do is we build a generator that makes a landscape, and then you just sort of let it go and do its own thing.
You knock down the first domino and walk away.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
But then again, I really have to make sure that I'm not being fooled in some way. That again, I'm always going to have something in reserve with a question, and you're going to have to answer all of these questions.
Yeah,
I'm not. It's not that I'm being unfair, but let's really look at the size of the claim that's being made here, that the popular belief in this God, its qualities is that it has unlimited power, unlimited knowledge, unlimited goodness. When you put no limits on something, it's easy. If we're going to test for like Bigfoot, all you really need is somebody to generate your hairy beast ape man. And there you go. There's Bigfoot. I mean, that's a much easier thing. It's a smaller claim.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, there you go. And Superman, it's like, okay, we want to see if this guy can bend steel and shoot lasers out of his eyes and fly. That's testable. We can do that. But when you're saying there's no limits, you're testing this thing forever. This would potentially, the testing would, it would not just be me. It's not just that I'd have to test it. I'd have to recognize the limits of my own ability to know even what questions to ask.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an astrophysicist. I'm not a geneticist. I would have, people who are experts on these subjects would have to do the testing.
I want to see them dogpile this thing with all the right questions and really come out with this sort of stuff. I want to, because you know that every scientist in that room is going to want to be the first to debunk this. And I want them to come at it with hammer and tongs. And if it's true, it will survive all of that testing. And that makes it sort of makes it true.
How would you not get the Nobel Prize?
How could you not? That you're begging for the Nobel Prize. And again, as you may know, if you're listening to the show and you have listened to it for several times, I'm a big nerd. And if you're a sci-fi fan, it's not hard to imagine a being that can do this stuff without being God. Anyone who's seen Disney's Aladdin, Q from Star Trek is a really good example, Mr. Mixyez Pytelek from Superman comics, these are all characters who can snap their fingers and produce an elephant in the room. There's somebody who can fly between dimensions, there's somebody who can go into the heart of a sun, snuff out the sun, bring it back. This is amazing stuff, but we can all agree they're not God.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to prove you're not just that. And that's the thing I find kind of funny, why a Christian would be so quickly to buy into somebody's claims that they're God, especially when their bad guy in their mythology is the devil, who's a trickster, who at the end of the book tries to trick people into thinking he's God. Yeah. You'd set the bar really high for something like that. And again, show me you're not Q.
We have a call. And let's go straight to this. John from Cincinnati, you say you've got proof of God for us, so why don't you give it a shot?
Well, we were talking about what could be a sign that, you know, God is real and actually there. And, you know, I've been seeing this come up in other forums before, and, you know, so thought about it a bit, and I thought, you know, what if simply, like, nobody got hungry for a year?
Ooh, that's a cool one.
But again, to toss questions out there, how do we know it's not just some sort of technological thing that we've been altered by some alien race? I mean, as long as we're kind of pulling things out of our hat,
we could really falsify them.
We can make that almost anything. No one got hungry for a year. That would be a huge thing. But again, yeah. I need to see the line of evidence between this and a God.
Well, there isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, though.
The thing is, nobody got hungry for a year. That could be a virus or a bacteria that invades your stomach and somehow transforms waste material into food. I mean, it could go either way.
If we're going to play the game like we're solipsists, where we believe that only our mind is real and the universe is a fiction, what if there's just a snitch in the program and we're just a brain in a jar and the computer sending stuff into us just had a glitch or a virus or something? There's all sorts of stuff that, I mean, and again, until you have positive evidence for any of that, I'm not going to assume that it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I understand. The end of the line is still doubt, you know?
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to is the evidence has to be, the thing about evidence in the scientific method is that it has to be overwhelming. Its statistical analysis we have to have like 95% confidence or better usually in science papers.
Something like that.
You have to answer all the questions that the old theory did and more.
Right. Yep.
You can't, and this is the thing a lot of religions do, is they have a tendency to make excuses for the other ones. I have a tendency to call this winning a no prize for Jesus. If you don't know what the no prize is, this is something Marvel Comics did back in the 70s, where if you pointed out a continuity error and came up with an excuse, let's just say Spider-Man's a neighbor died, and then an issue later he shows up again getting his mail, and there's no explanation. A no prize is one when somebody comes up with some off-panel excuse for why that happened. People do this with the Bible all the time, where, oh, there must have been something between the pages. That's not the same as finding evidence for something.
Sure.
So is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, not right now. It's just
all right, well,
too involved for...
Feel free to call back next week.
Maybe so.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Yeah. Again, we really want to be open-minded about this. And remember, open-minded doesn't mean that you accept any idea. And I think this is something a lot of people seem to understand. Being open-minded doesn't mean that I assume every claim is true until it's proven false, because then you're going to have to take on a lot of ideas that they contradict one another.
Right.
The world can't be flat and round at the same time. The world can't be all just a dream or all absolutely real at the same time. The President of the United States can't be both a reptilian alien and a human being.
Well, I've seen that theory. Apparently that's possible, because we're all a little bit reptilian or something like that.
Oh, no, not David Icke.
Yeah, once you go David Icke, you can't come back.
Oh. Oh, my. Yeah, there's nothing really to say about that. The bottom line is that you should always hold back on believing something until you have a reasonable amount of evidence. And that amount of evidence is going to change depending on the size of the claim. Oh. Like I said, with Bigfoot, that's an easy thing to prove. It's like saying, oh, wow, is Barack Obama the president of the United States? Is he born in the United States? There's documentation you can prove.
Yeah.
And if you're somebody who's so cut into a specific answer that you don't want to accept new evidence, and you just call everything a lie, whether it's a long-form birth certificate or a dinosaur bone, then there's really nothing I can say to you, because that's the exact opposite of open-minded. When I ask a religious person, what would it take to change your mind about God? And they say, absolutely nothing. That's a problem, because we won't say that. I think the evidence would have to be really big, and some people might feel it's unreasonable. But that's because you're making such a big claim.
They're also lying in that case. I'll straight up say that people who say nothing, absolutely nothing, will change their mind about God. I've met those people. And then I've seen what happens when they finally get the proof they're looking for. It happens. There's, you know, at least in this case, we're willing to admit that something can change our mind.
I think that's the only thing that any honest person can do. And this is comes down to what I've said before, is that 90% of sane, honest people are agnostic, that we're not going to pretend that we absolutely know whether a God exists. But there's a question of certainty, and I feel fairly certain that there's probably not a God based on the lack of evidence, but that can change in a day.
Yeah.
Give me something to measure. Give me something to look at. Give me those signature written into the fabric of the universe, the way that Sam says.
The way Slarty Bartfast wrote his signature into the Florida archipelago?
I was listening to that today. Yes. Oh.
I mean, give us something. Give us something like that, and not just look at the flowers, look at the trees, because you know what? Look at the cancer, look at the famine.
Look at the cholera.
Look at the cholera. If this is part of God's plan and that's pretty, there's parts of it that aren't, and you can't just point to the fact that something is aesthetically pleasing and say that, hey, that's proof that there's a creator of the universe and it's loved you, and oh, by the way, it's the one from this book.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, that's about what we got today. We are meeting up at Red Hot on 6th Ave in Tacoma at 5 o'clock. Come out for drinks and hot dogs and really good beer.
Very good beer.
And
Or if you're cheap, you can get less than perfect beer.
Hey, don't knock PBR, man.
All right. My name is Sam Olvey. With me today was Deanna Joy Lyons. How you doing?
Thanks for listening.
And Mike Gillis.
Good to be here.
Our call screener was Rebecca Friedman. Our production assistant was Rich Lyons. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. You can contact us at askanatheist.tv or give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. You guys have a good day.
This is KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma. Your